The Knowing Jewish History, we're up to the year 3389. We had learned about Darius, the first Darius. We had learned about his son-in-law Koresh. We had learned how they had gone to war and conquered Babylon. We had discussed how archaeologists speak about a peaceful takeover of Babylon. That's not our tradition. We saw support for the archaeologists in the verses in Yeshaya at the end of last week. We saw verses in Yeshaya that sound like the archaeologists claim, yet there are other verses in Yeshaya which we have a tradition are in reference to the war between the Persian Mede Empire and the Babylonian Empire. So here we've learned something very interesting, that the Persian Medes didn't see that they could win the war, and it was only after the writing on the wall that Daniel had interpreted, and then they got word that God had said they would conquer Babylon. It's only then that they proceeded to conquer Babylon. They were ready to give up. They saw they had lost. That explains why Belshazzar had celebrated that night, because he had succeeded in quelling a very important rebellion. Now the Persians and Medes have taken over Babylon, and Darius is the king. He writes it that Darius was ill. In Josephus, I think it says that Darius got wounded at war and he was going to die. Darius, Daryovesh the first, was only going to be king for 1 year, and then his son-in-law Koresh is going to take the throne. So he sees he is on the verge of dying. He calls in his son-in-law Koresh and appoints him over the kingdom. And Koresh takes the throne in Darius's life, meaning Darius wants to ensure there's a peaceful takeover, and so he transfers the kingdom to Koresh in his lifetime. And he warns Koresh, keep your end of the deal. Remember, their deal was that the kingdom shifts from the Medes to the Persians, and then back to the Medes, then back to the Persians, that they'll take turns at the throne. And then he grants permission that the Jews will rebuild Jerusalem, and they give the Jews the vessels of the Beit HaMikdash. And so in the first year of Koresh's reign, he fulfills the promise that he and Darius had made when they were both fighting to conquer Babylon. And he tells the Jews they may ascend and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. And that's exactly what we're learning in the Navi Yeshaya, where the Navi foretells of this King Koresh, who will give license to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. 52 years have passed since the destruction of the Beit HaMikdash, and now the Jews return to lay the foundations of the Beit HaMikdash. What happens next is that their enemies in Israel, the Kutim, the Shomronim, the Samaritans, the non-Jewish nations that have been imported 52 years or 70 years earlier to settle the land of Israel when the Jews were exiled, so they're displeased with the Jews' return to Zion, and so they send word back to Koresh, and they say, you should know the Jews are plotting against you. The Jewish kingdom has always reigned till the Euphrates. If you allow them to rebuild their Beit HaMikdash, if you allow them to return, their intent is to fortify Jerusalem and then be the major power on the western side of the Euphrates. You will lose half your kingdom. And so Koresh accepts what they write. Among the authors of this is Haman's son Shimshi. And Koresh sends word that the Jews should stop rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash. And so the Jews who have traveled back to Israel under Koresh's promise that they would rebuild the Beit HaMikdash find themselves living in Israel with their enemies, and the promise is not kept. The Jews are told, stop building the Beit HaMikdash. And they remain in limbo here in Israel without the license to build the Beit HaMikdash, without proper protection, and they're living here under the reign of Koresh and Ahasuerus until Ahasuerus will pass on. Ahasuerus, who is Esther's, Vashti's husband. And when Ahasuerus will die, his son, Darius, Daryovesh, the son of Ahasuerus, will take the throne. And in the second year, he will give license to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. Meaning from the time Koresh gives license to the time that the rebuilding actually happens, another 18 years will pass. Yes?
What's the connection with that and Ezra?
How many years are there from the War of Independence to the Six-Day War?
19.
Yeah, do the math. Yeah. So, over here, we have 18 years, which brings us to 70 years. It was 70 years now that the temple was destroyed, and now that the 70 years are up, it's been 70 years since the destruction, now they're going to come back and rebuild the Beit HaMikdash. I'm sorry, what did you ask?
Isn't Ezra part of the second Beit HaMikdash?
Yeah, we spoke about Ezra earlier. We're going to come back to that soon. It's a phenomenal thing that Koresh was able to remember the names of all his workers. He had an extraordinary memory, because we're talking about over 500,000 workers, and he knew them all by name. So the Medrash mentions it in passing, and he says what I thought the Medrash means to say. The Medrash doesn't spell it out. He says what I thought the Medrash means to say, and that is that he had an unusual memory, Koresh. There was something not normal about the ability to remember so many names. Saying, who could remember 500,000 names? Rav Eliashiv couldn't remember the names of all his grandchildren and great-grandchildren.
500,000 people?
Right. They say Bill Clinton is like that. They say Bill Clinton remembers the name of every person he ever met. I once saw, I taught with a rabbi years later. Students would come to visit us. Students who were by us only for 2 or 3 weeks for Hadracha programs for Bnei Akiva, and they'd walk in and he'd call them each by name. So I've seen people like that. Okay, it's not the mind I have. Some people have this talent. They can meet a person for a short time and years later remember their name. So it says Koresh had that talent. He remembered the name of over 600,000 workers. Okay. So Koresh was the first king in Persia who expanded the Persian kingdom to include much of the Middle East. Meaning, he wasn't the first Persian king, but he was the first one who expanded their empire. The year that he conquers Babylon is year number 70 from the beginning of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. The Navi in Jeremiah foretells that Babylon will have 70 years before Hashem takes them down. So the 70 years begin with Nebuchadnezzar, because Nebuchadnezzar is the one who built up the Babylonian Empire. Nebuchadnezzar was the midget. You guys remember? He was a warrior in the army of Sennacherib, the Assyrian emperor. And when the Assyrian Empire lost their battle against Jerusalem, then Nebuchadnezzar went to build up the Babylonian Empire, took over the Babylonian Empire, and then a year after his reign, took over the whole Assyrian Empire. Meaning he swallowed up the Assyrian Empire by the second year of his reign of Babylon, and then he went on to conquer Israel and Jerusalem, and then ultimately destroy the Beit HaMikdash. So we have Nebuchadnezzar, and then Evil Merodach, who reigned for 23 years, and then Belshazzar for 3 years, so that's 25 years. And Nebuchadnezzar himself was 45 years. So that's how you end up with 70 years. 45 for Nebuchadnezzar, 23 for his son Evil-Merodach, and Belshazzar reigned 2 years, and then in the third year, there was overlap between the 45, 23, and 3. There was overlap when the 70 years were up. That's when Babylon was overtaken by the Persian Mede Empire. He writes over here that Koresh was a kind king. Koresh was kind to the Jews. Koresh is the one we learned in Yeshaya, the 45th chapter, what they call the 45th chapter, what we learned last week, that he was called by the Navi Mashiach, the Anointed One. Koresh is the one that's referenced in the end of the book of Ezra, the end of Divrei Hayamim and the beginning of Ezra, as the one who Hashem inspired to rebuild the second Beit HaMikdash. So there was great hopes for what Koresh would do. How did they rebuild the Beit HaMikdash? So Chazal tell us three prophets ascended with him. We have Haggai, Zechariah, and Malachi, the final three prophets. they went up with them to rebuild the second temple. One prophet said to them where the temple would be. He marked out the boundaries of the temple. One prophet told them where the altar would be. And one prophet told them the halacha that they're allowed to bring sacrifices even if they haven't fully rebuilt the temple. They put up curtains and they could build offer sacrifices. Others are of the opinion that the third prophet gave testimony that they're supposed to change the writing of the Torah. We know that the writing of the Torah during the first temple period, it's not clear whether it was the same script as we have today in the Torah, or it was a different script. Two opinions in among the Tanaim, and according to the opinion that what we have today, which is called Ktav Ashuris, that was the Ktav, that was the writing, the script they had in Assyria. So that opinion says that they had a tradition from Moshe that a time would come when we re-enter the land of Israel and we would have to change the script of the Torah scrolls. It seems that we don't rule with that opinion. It seems that we rule that the traditional writing from the days of Moshe Rabbeinu was the script that we have today. That's the indication in the Talmud in Megillah. But there are two opinions in the Talmud in Tractate Sanhedrin as to whether the script changed, whether we had a tradition from Moshe that it would change at one point. Rabbi Feinstein said once that the writing that was on the wall in the days of Ezra was already in the writing of the new script, and that's why no one recognized it, because it was the script that they hadn't yet recognized would be Hebrew writing. Yes, sir?
Where would you find reference to that type of writing? Where would you see it? What books can you find? Is it the Dead Sea Scrolls, that script?
So the Dead Sea Scrolls are... Okay, let's make an order. The script that's called Ktav Ivri was definitely used. Was it used by Karaites? Was it used by common folks? It was definitely used, like the Dead Sea Scrolls. An example of that is that what we call in English the letter O in Assyrian script is a samach, right? A samach is an O. It's like a circle. In Ktav Ivri, that's an ayin. Two different letters. The same circle, a full circle. So in Assyrian script, that's a samach. In Ktav Ivri, call it Hebrew script, that's a letter ayin, two totally different letters. We definitely have writing, including the Dead Sea Scrolls, which is in Ktav Ivri. Whether that was the script the common folk used, whether that was the script the Karaites used, is a good question. Meaning when we find artifacts from those days that are written in that script, the question is, was that the traditional script or was it the Karaites? The rabbis didn't have they didn't have control at all over what was going on among the people. It was very hard to control it. The Talmud says a person in his town woke up one morning and said, you have to shecht fish, no eating fish without shechting them. So the rabbis got word of it, and they sent their men out there, and they said, we're going to beat the daylights out of you. You're inventing a new Torah, and the Torah doesn't say you have to shecht fish. But had they not heard of it, he would have gotten away with it. The common folk, if there was someone who told them, I know Torah, and this is what it should be, so it was very hard to rein people in. You're not talking about a generation where you have internet, a telephone. Each community was its own entity. So the rabbis would travel and teach, but it was difficult. It was very, very difficult to educate the people. That's why when we find ancient scripts that are written in Ktav Ivri, that's not necessarily a proof of anything. We know there were people who were writing things with that script. The question is, were they traditional Jews or were they Karaites? Were they Samaritans? Meaning, were they Jews who were going with tradition? We definitely have scrolls that were written in that Ktav Ivri. So in the Mishnah already, the rabbis of the Mishnah had a debate. In the days of the first temple, which script was used for writing Torah and Tefillin? Two opinions in the Talmud and Tractate Sanhedrin. One opinion says they used Ktav Ivri. They had a tradition that their writing would change with the rebuilding of the second temple. And that's what they did. They had a tradition going back to Moshe that there would come a time to change the script. The other opinion says not true. The Karaites, other people used that script, but the Jews always used our script. And it seems that that's how we rule. That the script we have today was the script they were using in Sifrei Torah all the way back to Moshe Rabbeinu. That the traditional Jews always had this script. But he is bringing the other opinion out.
Why is it called a Sumerian temple? Are other writings going back to Syria where they have this type of writing?
It seems. Others want to say Ashur doesn't come from the word Assyrian, but rather Me'ushar, that it's a beautiful, it's a happy script.
I think that Ivri is the one that you were using, because Ivri means Hebrew.
I think it's Czech.
The question is, does Ivri mean Hebrew, or does Ivri mean Me'ever HaNahar, on the other side of the Euphrates?
It could also be that those titles came at some later point.
Right.
But do we have evidence of this script being used in non-Torah?
For sure.
From other places in the world? Like
Other places, I don't know.
Like from Syria or whatever?
That I don't know.